He has in his memory a very, very gifted.
Okay, Rabosai, so we're on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. And we had two statements of Rabba. Let's just review. And the Gemara tries to work a Trichusa, why we needed both statements. One case was Gidi Gonovlo and Tvacho B'Shabbos. The other case was Gidi Gonovlo U'Tvacho B'Machteres. Now, in both of these cases, Rabba seems to be subscribing to the same thesis, to the same principles, namely that there will be no kimlei b'derabinei. We're going to suspend kimlei b'derabinei in the case of a knas. However, that knas is dependent upon mamon, meaning there has to be keren. Once there's keren, we can talk about knas. So if the keren would coincide with a violation of either Shabbos or Machteres, then we would apply the principle of Kim Lev D'Ramine, because Rav understands that according to Rabbi Meir, there is Kim Lev D'Ramine in Misa and Tashlume Mamon, a Chiv Mamon, and that would apply therefore to the basic Chiv of Kinyani Gneva for the Karen. So for example, if the Gneva took place on Shabbos, which means he would simultaneously make a Kinyan Gneva and a violation of Shabbos, then he would be potter from Keren. And once he's potter from Keren, then ipso facto, he's going to be potter from Kefel and Dalet Behe, because im ein Gneva, ein Tvicha Mechira. You cannot have a Chiyuv Knas, in the case of a Ganav, without incurring, first and foremost, the basic Chiyuv of Keren. But if the Gneva itself took place on Erev Shabbos, or let's say even on Shabbos itself, but before he violated the Shabbos, so let's say he lifted up the Gneva and he hasn't yet taken it out, then in such a case, he's already Chayv Keren. If he's already Chayv Keren, then even if his Tvicha Mechira were on Shabbos, then because of the nature of Knas, that was the principle that we studied yesterday, Chidish Shechid Shetor B'Knas, therefore he gets both Misa and he pays Knas. And if we apply that in the case of Machteres, if the Gdi was Gonovlo before he went into the Machteres, in which case he incurs a Chiyuv Keren, then even if the Tvicha was Betocha Machteres, he's going to be Chayiv Dal Vehe, because when it comes to Knas, we don't apply the principle of Kim Leib Niram. The Gemara therefore wants to know, why did Rabba feel compelled to repeat himself twice? He has it in the case of Tvacho B'Shabbos. Why does he have to repeat himself in the case of Tvacho B'Machteres? So the last thing we did yesterday was Rashi's Pshat in the Tzrichusa. Rashi understands that the Tzrichusa addresses the issue of whether he's Chayev Keren if he violates the Shabbos. Let's say, for example, if the Ganav violated Hotzah at the moment that he made a Kinyan Gneva, so Rabba says in that case, he doesn't pay Keren. And again, as a footnote, hence he won't pay Talat Vehefa Tvicha. And number two, Rabba repeats himself that if he was Baba Machteres and the Gneva took place in the Machteres, then in such a case, Kimle the Rabbine applies and therefore he's not Chayv Keren. And Rashi understands that the Gemara felt that Rabba had to repeat himself. In the case of Shabbos, perhaps, we're going to say that Shabbos is such an Avera Chamura that it knocks off a Chiyuv Mamon. But Machteres is an Avera She'ena Chamura. It's lower on the echelon. It's not as severe as Shabbos. And the difference between Shabbos and Machteres is that whereas Shabbos is an Iser Olam, which means that once he incurs a violation of Shabbos, he's Chayav Misa from now until he dies. But in the case of Machteres, he's only Chayav Iser Shah. He's only Chayav Misa for that moment that he has the status of a Baba Machteres. But as soon as he leaves the Machteres, he's no longer Chayav Misa. So that's only a temporary Chayav Misa. In such a case, maybe even if the Gneva was on Shabbos, we would think that he has to pay for the Keren. Why would he have to pay for the Keren? Because we don't have an Isur Chamur to knock off the Keren. We only have an Isur Shah. Then flip it around the other way. If we only had the case of Machteres, we would say that Machteres is more Chamur than Shabbos. And it has the power to knock off a chiyuv moment. What makes machteres more chayav than Shabbos? So that's what we were up to yesterday. Let's see it inside. The Gemara says ve'iash me'idin machteres. So let's make sure we're all on the right page. We're on daf lamed dalid amid beis, and we're up to the words ve'iash me'inon machteres. So I'm going to underline this in my Gemara, but nobody has a pencil here, do they? This is a pencil? Okay, good. So ve'iash me'inon, this is where we're up to machteres. So let me try to tell you where to find it. You'll see a Tosus Diva Maskel Mishum on the right, if you have a classic Gemara. And if you take a beeline straight across, you'll see Ve'iyash Mina Machteres, the first word in the line is Machteres, Mishum de Machtarto Zui Yasra Oso. Here's a Chiyuv Misa, and to my knowledge, it's the only case in Halacha where there is such a thing as a Chiyuv Misa without a Hasra. How could you have a Chiyuv Misa without a Hasra? That's the case of Baba Machteres, where the Torah says, Ein lo domin, that he's Chayv Misa, even though there was no Hasra. Nobody warned him, my friend, if you burglarize, you know, if you go in as a burglar and you tunnel your way in, you'll be killed. Nobody told him that, nobody warned him that, and yet he's going to be killed. Aval Shabbos is relatively a lenient, a kal iser, because boy Hasra, we cannot be mechayv v'misa unless there was Hasra. Is aim alone. In such case, I would think, and again, I'm interpreting this Gemara according to Rashi, I would think that the chiyuv misa for Shabbos would not be such a powerful chiyuv misa that it would potter him up from mama.
I don't see any other way to interpret this than Rashi.
So then I'm going to offer you a second shot here, and I'm going to tell you why the Rishonim reject Rashi. So this is a discussion in the Rishonim, and it's here in the Masiftin, footnote number Yud Aleph. The Rishonim asked the following question: how is it possible that there's a Havamina here that if a man violates the Shabbos, he will be chayev for tashlume mama, and we would suspend the principle of kimlev the rabbi? So let's just get the case. There's a Havamina here, according to Rashi, that if a man steals, he steals something on Shabbos, and he's megar v'yotze, which means he violates the Iser Hotzah that generates a Chiyuv Misa, and at the same moment he is a Kone, he's a Gaz, a Gonev, a Ganev who makes a Kinyan Gneva, and he incurs a Chiyuv Keren. There's a Hav Mina here that will give him both Misa and Keren. Why? Because Shabbos is Kal vis-a-vis Machteres, because Shabbos requires Hasra. How could there be such a Havamina? Halo ikar din kimle b'diramine nemar b'ritzicha sheyesh bo din hasra. The case of halo ye ason anoshi anesh, which is the source for kimle b'diramine, is the case of ritzicha, right? He tried to kill one person and he killed another person. And the Torah says that if that other person dies, then he doesn't pay tmei vlados, he doesn't pay damages. That's a case of Ritzicha. In the case of Ritzicha, he's only going to be chayav if there was a Hasra. And yet, despite the fact that we need a Hasra, and that's a precondition, nevertheless we apply the principle of Kimlei V'Diramine. How could there possibly be a Havamina that in the case of Shabbos, because you need a Hasra, there's no Kimlei V'Diramine, and the Ganav has to pay Karen? This is what I call TKO. I mean, this, I don't begin to see an answer to this kasha on behalf of Rashi. I mean, to say that there's a Havamina here that goes against the very source, the very root of Kimlev the Ravine, which is the case of Ritzicha, where there is Asra, where there's a requirement, doesn't make any sense. So at this point, he quotes the Rishonim, he quotes the Ritva, and they offer a different explanation of this Tzrichusa. This Tzrichusa is not about the question of Kimle b'diramine, where it does apply, namely in the Chiyuv Mamon, when the Geneva took place on Shabbos or in the Machteres, but rather for the other Chiddush of Rabbah, that we suspend the principle of Kimle b'diramine in a case of Knas. And here's how we have to read the Gemara. The Iyashmi Inan Shabbos, if we only had the Chiddush of Rava in the first statement of Rava, where he violated the Gnev, he implemented the Gnev on Erev Shabbos, and then he shechted the animal on Shabbos, is then we would say that only in the case of Shabbos is there a din of Knas, meaning that even though he's Chayev Misa, he still has to pay Knas. So again, let's just get the scenario. The case is where he steals something on Friday, an animal, and then he shechts the animal on Shabbos. And we're going to say now that Rabbi's first statement is that he has to pay Dalet Vehei. Why? What happened to Kim Levi the Ramine? The very moment that he slaughtered the animal, he incurred a Chiyuv Misa for violating the Tilus Nishal, one of the 39 blocks. The answer is Knas. That's the magical Chiddush of Rabbi. But we're going to apply this Chiddush in the case of Shabbos. Why? Kevan de Chamur Din Shabbos. Mishum di isuro isur olam. Since he's violating the Shabbos, we want to be as machmer as we can, because this is such a severe isur that, again, in this havamina, that Rav is going to say, hit him with a knas. Again, we can't undermine the halacha of ason odoshi yonesh, meaning kimlev the ravini. So we're going to say, you know what, kimlev the ravini applies when it's mum, but not when it's knas. So in the case of knas, we have to sort of speak a license, a little bit of a green light to go ahead and say, despite Kim Levi the Ramani, this is going to be the exception. And why? Why do we want to be so harsh with him and make him pay the knas? The answer is because he violated Shabbos. And Shabbos is an Isur Chomer. Now we're going to avail ourselves of the possibility of saying, forget about Kim Levi the Ramani, let's suspend that, the operation of that principle, and let him pay knas. Aval toveach b'machteres, where the shechita took place in the machteres, that's only an Isur Shah. Ema, we would think in such a case that we're not going to say meis umeshalim knas, el niftar mea knas. In this case, we're going to apply the principle of Kim Lev the Ramine that we apply to Mamon and extend it even to the case of Knas, because this Kim Lev the Ramine is a knacker Kim Lev Knas. It's a second rate, a secondary Kim Lev the Ramine, because really, there is no Chiyuv Misa here. It's only a temporary Chiyuv Misa. In the case of a temporary Chiyuv Misa, we're going to apply Kim Levi the Ramine, and we're going to say that he's potter from Knas, meaning we're going to be more lenient with him, and we're going to extend the Kim Levi the Ramine to include even a case of Knas. So basically, the way the Ritva is formulating it, the general rules of the game, the general principles were given by the Torah, but the way they specifically apply, that's up to our logic. We have to decide if and when we're going to apply these rules. So what are the two rules? The rule is, and that we derive from Ason, that in the case of a Chiyuv Misa, there's no Chiyuv Mamon, that's Kim Levi the Ramine. However, there's another rule that Knasu Chiddush HaChiddush Torah, and we suspend Kim Levi the Ramine. Again, we don't have a pasuk for that. All we had is the Svara of Rava, and that was the big Chiddush of Rava, that Knas is different. The Afagav de Miktal Mishalim. So now we have one Pasuk and one Svara. We have a Yalfus of Kim Levi the Ramine from Ason, and we have a Svara of Knas, of Rava. How do we juggle it? When will we apply this, and when will we apply that? And the answer is that the Torah gives it over to the Chachamim to use their own logic to decide when to apply this principle and when to apply that principle. In other words, the general guidelines that the Torah gives us include the fact that Knas is different than Mamon, and therefore there's reason in certain cases to be so machmir on him that even though he's Chayav Misa, we're going to impose the Chiyuv Knas on. But exactly in what circumstances are we going to do that, and when are we going to go back to the Kim Levi the Ramine, which in theory should extend to a broad scope and apply even in the case of Knas, that's up to our logic, that's up to our smart. So in the case of Shabbos, which is an Iser Olam, here we're going to say, let's be very machmir, let's take Knas out of the bag of Kim Levi the Ramine, because Chidushu Shechitcha Torah B'Knas. But in the case of Machteres, where the overall picture is a weak picture, he's not really in violation of an Iser Olam, he's only in violation of an Iser Shah. For this moment, he's Chayav Misa. Here we're going to say, let's go back to the principle of Kim Levi the Ramine, and therefore he's going to be potter from Knas. Hence, I need Rabbah's second statement about Toveach B'Machteres. Let's go on. If we only had the second statement of Rabbah, I would have said that in Machteres we want to be more Machmir because Machtarto Zui Hasrasa. Avol Shabbos, the boy Hasra. Shabbos requires Hasra. It's relative to Machteres and Iser Kal. It's a conditional, iffy kind of Vechi of Misa. And since there's a condition here, we're going to say, let's apply the principle of Kim Levin Ramine. We're not going to take Knas out of the role, out of the realm of Kim Levin Ramine, and rather we're going to say Kim Levin Ramine, even in this case of Knas. Hence, we have a Havamina that he should be exempt. In the case of Shabbos, he should be exempt from paying Dalavay. So now we're up to the new sugya for today, Omar Rav Papa. So let's just make sure we all have the place. If you're taking a look at Tosfos Dibur HaMaskil Mishum, on the right side of Lamed Daled Amud Beis, drop down two lines, Omar Rav Papa. Now Rav Papa would, at the face of it, seem to be repeating the same rules and regulations of Rabbah, but applying them in a different scenario. And that's going to bother the Gemara, and Rabbi Acha is going to be compelled to come up with some new chiddush, groundbreaking chiddush of Rav Papa. Hoysa para gnuvalo. So let's assume the man stole a cow on Erev Shabbos, on Friday. So therefore he's chayv keren. Utvacha b'Shabbat. So he did the shechita on Shabbos itself. Chayv. He'll have to pay Dalet v'hei, shekvar nischayev b'gneva, kodem sheyovali de'isur Shabbos. Meaning, he's already chayev in Keren. Once he's chayev in Keren, then even though the shechita is a simultaneous overlap of both a chiyuv mamon and a chiyuv misa, nevertheless, since it's a knas for the shechita, namely Dalet v'hei, we're going to apply the principle that we saw in Rabbah, that we suspend the Kim Lev the Rabbine in the case of a Knas, and he'll get both Misa and Dalet Vehei. And again, this is all based on the predicate that on Erev Shabbos he did the Gneva, so we have a Chiyuv Keren. Hoysa Parasha Ulalo Utvacha B'Shabbos. A man was he borrowed a cow, so somebody lent him a cow. And on Shabbos, he shechted the cow. Now notice, he became a ganav on Shabbos, because up until Shabbos, he was allowed to use the cow. So he's milking the cow, he's threshing, he's harvesting, whatever he's doing with the cow, that's fine. But now he went and he shechted the cow. So then he becomes a ganav. If he becomes a ganav, then simultaneous with his gneva, he violated Shabbos by slaughtering the cow. Hence, we're going to apply the principle of Kim Levi Ramine. Now you might ask, okay, that's why he has to pay, right? We're gonna apply the principle of Kim Levi Ramine, hence he doesn't have to pay Karen, but let him pay Dalet Vehei for the Shechita. And the answer is that if there's no Karen, right, there's no Gneva, then there's no Dalet Vehei. And this is gonna tickle the brains of the Gemara, because it seems like Rav Papa is really just reiterating exactly what we know from Rabbah, and therefore, hence, what is the Chiddush of Rav Papa? But everything I said to you until this point is based on a certain girsa, and that's not the girsa that Rashi has, and therefore, it's not the girsa that we have. It is the girsa of many Rishonim. They add to the Sefer of Rav Papa the following text. Im Gneva Enkan, Tvicha Mechira Enkan. Meaning, in their text, it says exactly what I told you it says, namely that the reason why in the Sefer, in the case of Parsha Ulo, Tvacha B'Shabbos, he's Potur, is because there's no Chiyuv Karen. Why is there no Chiyuv Karen? When did he shech the animal? And when did he incur a Chiyuv Gneva? That was on Shabbos, hence Kim Lev the Ramine. And now we're talking about a Chiyuv Mamon and not a Chiyuv Knas. Then we have to add, why is he Potter? Let him pay at least for Dalet Vehei. The answer is, Im Gneva Enkan, Tvicha Mechira Enkan. And that's the Girsa of the Svarim. Rashi doesn't have this Girsa. Yeah.
Im Gneva Enkan,
Right. I mean, I'm just repeating what you have here in the Gemara, right? Im ein gneva ein tvicha mechira, right? You have that on Daf Lamed Daled Omid Beis.
Well, Rav Papa, I don't understand.
No, again, we had it twice in Rabba here on this page, and now we have it a third time in Rav Papa. If you have the Girsa of the Rishon,
got it. Okay, thank you.
And again, the Girsa of the Rishon makes a lot of sense. Why? Because although he incurred Gneva at the moment of Shechita, but nevertheless. Well, nevertheless, although he doesn't have to pay Karen, why not argue let him pay Dal Vehe? Because again, Rav Papa is reflecting and reiterating the Shita of Rabba that in the case of Knas, you do pay Knas, and you don't apply Kimle Rabbanei to Knas. Now, if that be the case, why does Rav Papa say you're part of in the Sefer, you should be Chayv at least Dal Vehe? The answer is, in Gneva Enkan, Tvicha Mechira Enkan. You can only be Chayv a Knas for Tvicha Mechira, if you're Chai for Karen. Here you're not Chai for Karen because the Gneva was on Shabbos itself, hence Kim Levi the Rabbinate exempts you from the Chi of Karen. Rashi doesn't have this Girsa. This entire line, which again a phantom line because we don't have it in our text, because Rashi doesn't have it, our Girsa always reflects the Sheet of Rashi, we don't have it in Gneva, in Tvicha, in Mechira. Why? Because Rashi says that the discussion here of Rav Papa has nothing to do whatsoever with the laws of Gneva. In fact, a Shoel, even if he went ahead and he slaughtered the animal, he killed the animal, is not a Ganav. There's no discussion about Kefel, no discussion about Arab Chamisha. It's not even a Havamina here that we could do. You want to answer the question, well, all right, he's not Chayef Karen because of Kimle Ramine, but let him be Chayef Fetvicha Mechira Dal Vehe. No, he's not even a Ganav. Rashi holds he's not a Ganav. Why is he not a Ganav? Because the din is that if I give you an animal for She'ela, then your chiyuv is a chiyuv shomer. It's not a chiyuv of a ganav. Meaning, if the animal dies, or even if you kill the animal, whatever happens, you cannot fulfill your obligation as a shomer. Again, there are four categories of shomer. We're talking about one specific category, namely a shoel, to return the object that you received. In this case, to return the animal. So you have a cow, which you received. You're not a ganav. On the contrary, you're a shoel. You're allowed to do with this animal whatever you please. The only thing is, there's a little caveat here, you have to return the animal. You're only a shoel. You didn't buy the animal, you didn't get it as a gift, you have to return it. And there's only one case in which a shomer is chayev as a ganav, and it'll even be chayev for kefel and so forth, and that's called toein tainas ganav bepikadon. Are you familiar with that?
No.
No, that's a sugi in which I gave you an animal, and you were meant to watch the animal. Then when I come to claim the animal and collect it, you say it was stolen. It was stolen. Do we have any edim that was stolen? No, no edim that was stolen. It was stolen. So we check and we find, and later on we notice that the shomer has the animal tied up, you know, locked up in a closed pen. You know what I'm saying? So he that's called toein tainas ganav bepikon. Other than that, there's no such thing as a shomer being a ganav. He's
what
not
about,
a ganav.
What about Tzumat Yad for Shomer Chinam?
Oh, you mean Shleich Yad B'Pikon?
Yeah.
Okay, that would be another case. You're right. There are two cases in which a Shomer could be a ganav. One would be Toin Tanis Ganav B'Pikon, and the other would be Shleich Yad B'Pikon. But here's a case of a Shoel. In Shoel, there's no such thing as Shleich Yad B'Pikon. The Shoel is allowed to use the animal in any way he pleases. There's a Chi of Hashava. That's part of this Chaimus of a Shoel. And if he slaughters the animal, obviously he can't return the animal, but he's not a ganav. And there's no kefel, there's no talad vehe, there's nothing to talk about. The whole nidon here, the whole subject of our discussion here in Rav Papa is as far as the keren is concerned. And he's potter for the keren because he shechted it when? On Shabbos. If he shechted on Erev Shabbos, then he's chai of keren, right? He's chai of keren. Why? Because the fact that he violated the Shabbos on Shabbos, you see, it's a little bit strange. If you look at the first case of Rav Papa, the Reish I call it, Haisa Par Gnuva Lo Utvacha B'Shabbos. So what's Utvacha B'Shabbos all about here? Obviously, there was some sort of havamina that he would be chayev, but he's potter because he's because he was toveach, and the kamash will know that he's chayav because it was there. It's a little bit odd here. According to Rashi, tovacha b'shabbos, the chiddush is what? It was gnuva lo. So the pshat is like this. The reisha, according to Rashi, is not talking about a shoel. The reisha is talking about a ganav who goes into your, he goes into your corral and he steals your cow. If he did that on Erev Shabbos and then he shechted on Shabbos, he's going to have to pay dal vehe because he's a ganav. And then Rapapa says, in contrast to the sefer, that in the case of a parsha ula, in the case of a shoel, he's not chai for gneva, but would he be chayiv for tvicha? And the answer is that since he shechted on Shabbos, he's not chayiv for tvicha, meaning he doesn't have to return the value of the animal because kim lebe the rabbi mina. Now the strange thing is here that between the reish and the sefer, there's like a disconnect. If you follow me, you would have thought that the sefer is coming to tell you that in event that he, that he shechted the animal on Erev Shabbos, then he would be chayav dal vehei, but if he shechted on Shabbos, he's not chayav dal vehei. That's not true. So in other words, it doesn't parallel the ratio, because the ratio is talking about a chayav dal vehei because of tvicha b'Shabbos. The seifa has nothing to do with dal vehei. The word tvicha here in the seifa is totally disconnected. It's totally irrelevant to the tvicha of the reisha. The tvicha of the reisha is talking about a ganav, and should he incur a chiyuv of dal vehe? The answer is, well, if he did the gnev on Erev Shabbos and the tvicha was on Shabbos, then enoch yinam is chayv dal vehe, because we're not going to say kim lev the rami in the case of knas. That's fine, and the gemara is going to ask what the chiddush is. But the seifa is really a whole different story. The seifa is talking about a shoel who incurs a chiyuv to pay for the animal when he shechts it, not because of gneva, but because he cannot return it, and he did that on Shabbos. Simultaneously, he violated a chiyuv misa, and then we're going to apply the principle of kinyan the rami. It's a little bit disjunctive. There's no parallel here. There's no mirror image between the reisha and the seifa.
I've got two questions about timing according to Rashi. Number one, when is he actually chayav to return it? Not when he shechts it, when the Baal Bayit comes back and asks for it, right?
Right. You talk about a she'ula.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yes. Secondly, do we say Kimmel and Rabbine if they don't happen at the same time, but the Chiyuv Mita happens first?
No. It has to be Be'idna, Mamish at the same time.
So I'm not sure this is Be'idna. In other words, I shechted Yishak on Shabbat.
What we're talking about, Para?
Para she'ula.
Go ahead.
Yishak on Shabbat. At that point, he's Chayv Mita.
Right, and at that point he's
Karen. He's not Chayav Karen until he's supposed to return it, say, on Tuesday. That's when he becomes Chayav Karen.
That's what you mean? Well, let's put it this way.
The Maisama destroys it.
The Maisama Chayav is the Shechita. It's only collectible on Tuesday, but the Maisama Chayav, it took place on Shams. That's the Maisama Shechita.
Yeah, he took it out of the realm of Shula once he took it once he made the decision that it's his now, but he's going to shecht it. He's no longer. He took himself out of a borrow. He's a ganav at that point.
Well, according to the mitzvah, he's a ganav. According to Rashi, he's only chayav as a shoel, meaning he's chayav.
But at the moment he made it
according
impossible.
According to the mitzvah, you're right, Osher, that he became a ganav at the moment that he shecht it.
Right.
Because the mitzvah has a different girsa in Agamor.
Yeah,
the mitzvah's girsa is the girsa of gneva, that he became a ganav. Yeah. In one fell swoop, he became a ganav who's chayv dal vehe. That's a very unique case.
How would he, according to not the Ritva, how would Rashi then say that he's not a ganav?
Right.
If he once he takes it into his rishus now, if I'm a shoel and I've made a decision that I'm gonna steal it, and I'm gonna put it someplace else. Aren't they a ganav at that point, or not?
Could be. Well, I think you would need a taina in Bezdin to make you a ganav. Because again, there's no shlichus yad v'pikon in the case of a shoel. He's all tashmishim amut. So the worst case scenario would be if he was toin tainas ganav. That would make him for the ganav. But Rashi Shita is that other than toin tainas ganav, which is not our case, he's not a ganav. He's simply a shoel who cannot return the animal. And if he can't return the animal, he has to pay for that because the shoel is chayiv and hashavasa hasha'il.
Well, what you're saying,
but there's no Havavin according to Rashi, it'd be Chayav Kefil or Dal Behed.
Yeah, what you're saying is, according to Rashi, it becomes Chayav Karen as soon as he makes it impossible
to return.
Okay, thank right. you.
Again, the collection of that money may have to wait a few days.
Sorry. Right. Okay, thank you.
This is like a rhetorical question. Rav Papa has to repeat the same thing as Rava, just in instead of a gedi. Remember, until now we were talking about a goat. Now we're talking about a cow. Cow, goat, goat, cow, cow, goat, goat, cow. I mean, what's the difference between a goat and a cow? Amalei, so Rav Ashi responds to Rav Acha, Rav Papa Sheula Asalash Me'inon. The Reisha is just a repeat. Rav Papa is not being Mechadish anything. But the Seifa is a Chiddush. Why? Salke Daitachamina, I would have thought Hoel the Amar Rav Papa, this is the Rav Papa Mesech Abba Mitzia. Mishas Mishicha Hudis Chayev Lo B'Mizono Seha. Okay, let's talk about a Gemara in Bava Metzia. A Shoel obviously is allowed to use the cow in any way he sees fit, and now he's using the cow for what's called Disha, which I think in English is called threshing, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, now at the moment that he threshes with the cow, he's obligated to allow the cow to eat as the cow sees fit, free to eat. That's called lo saksom shor b'disha. You're not allowed to muzzle an animal.
That's what they mean by mizonot? No.
Okay, we're not up to mizonot yet.
Okay.
I'm leading up to it. Okay. So now, if the shoel went ahead and he muzzled the cow, then he violates the law of lo sachsom shor b'disha, which would apply even to the owner of the cow or to anyone else who uses the animal for work as a work animal while he's threshing. However, Rav Papa says the following, that in this case of a shoel, he has to pay out of pocket. How much does he pay? So there are different volumes that he has to pay for. In the case of a poro, he has to pay 4 kavim. In a case of a chamor, if he was barred a donkey and he was threshing with donkey, he pays 3 kavim. And there's a whole chart, a whole table, how much he has to pay depending upon the animal. What would the animal have normally eaten?
This is what he pay after the fact if he had muzzled the animal during the threshing.
Right, we're talking about here's the scenario. Number one, I borrow a cow from you. Number two, I'm doing disha with the cow. Number three, while I'm doing disha with the cow, I muzzle the cow. I violate a law of lo sachsom shor b'disha, but I have to pay you. Now, how much do I pay you? So that's a whole chart. And this is Rav Papa's Chiddush. What's Rav Papa's Chiddush? That a shoel, the moment he takes the animal, incurs a double chiyuv. Number one, he has to return the animal. Number two, he has to feed the animal. That obligation to feed the animal is a monetary obligation that's built into the she'ela, and it's called mizonos. So for example, If somebody would steal your animal and muzzle it, he doesn't have to pay you mizonos. He'll get malchus for violating los sasim shor b'disho, but he doesn't owe you anything. Rav Papa says in the case of a shoel, because from the get-go, from the moment that he takes the animal as she'ilo, he obligates himself with a monetary kinyan to support the animal with mizonos. In the case where he muzzles the animal, in addition to having violated the lav of los sasim, he also incurs a chiv to pay mizonos. And now Rav Papa wants to ask himself the following question. Very nice. I understand that he has to pay mizonos, but he's getting malchus. He's going to get malchus for lo sachsom shor b'disha. How can you, on the one hand, apply the principle of malchus, meaning implement malchus, and at the same time make him pay for mizonos? That's Rav Papa's question in Masechta Bava Metzia. Ein adam lokim mishalim. So Rav Papa answers, no. There's no simultaneity here. the chiyuv for mizonos is set in stone from the moment that he took the she'ela. Do you follow? Let's say the she'ela was for a month. I can tell you already at the first of the month when he took the animal into his possession how much the shoal is going to have to shell out for mizonos. We just check our table and we see what the daily diet is for a parah, for a chamor, whatever it might be. The chiv malchus, on the other hand, is only incurred at the moment of the chasima, when he violates the law of los sachs. The chiv mizonos, on the other hand, the arba kabbal parah, for example, that already was chal from the time that the she'ela begin, which is called Meshicha. Meshicha means when the shoel, we'll call him Shimon, takes the cow of Reuven and he pulls it into his possession. At that point already he's chayav b'mizonos. Therefore, says Rav Papa, he doesn't exempt himself from mizonos, he doesn't free himself from that liability when he violates losatzon later on and he muzzles the animal. Good. Very nice sugi about Metziah, but we're not learning about Metziah. We're learning Ksu. Last time I checked. So what's the relevancy? Oh, the Gemara wants to make a parallel. The man, the Shoel, shechted his friend's animal on Shabbos. Is Hochenami. I would have a Havamina to say that there's no Kimle to the Rabmina here. Why? Because the Chiv to pay for the animal is not generated at the moment that he slaughters the animal, or not like you want to say, Chayv Leib, right, when he forces him to on Tuesday to pay, you know, because he didn't return the animal. But rather, the chiv to pay for the animal is Mishah She'ela. Why? Because at the moment that he did a Meshicha to begin the She'ela on the first of the month, he incurs two chiyuvim, two monetary obligations. One is to return the animal, and if he doesn't return the animal, he has to pay for the animal. And number two, to feed the animal. So we already saw explicitly that Rav Papa said that from the time of the Meshicha, the initial Sheila, he has a chiyuv to pay for the mizonos. Hence, there's no kimlet and ravani when he muzzles the animal. Now we're saying, well, Rav Papa should go a step further. He should say, since it was a double chiyuv, and the chiyuv was that if I can't return the animal for whatever reason, and in the case of Shoel, it could be any reason. Let's say the animal drops dead of a heart attack. That's called the Malach HaMavis took the animal, or a bolt of lightning struck the animal. In all cases, Shoel has to pay for the animal. So therefore, there's an absolute chiv to pay for the animal. Now he has to potter himself up from paying for the animal. How does he potter himself up from that chiv? Well, in the case of his owners, by feeding the animal. In the case of Onsen, by returning the animal. Up until the point that he returns the animal, he has to pay for the animal. So now if we apply that Tavamina to the case of Tvacha B'Shabbos, he's going to have to pay for the Karen, for the animal itself. And according to the Ritva, he'll have to pay Dalvei, etc. Why? Because he was already chayev for the animal from the Shash Mishicha. And the Tvicha took place a month later, or whenever it took place on Shabbos. So the Chiyuv Bisa was incurred much later on, and therefore we don't apply the principle of Kimlev the Rami. Kamash Malon, this is Rav Papa's Chiyuv. She's not reiterating and regurgitating what we know from Rava. That was the ratio of Rav Papa, and that was just Derech Aga. The Sefer is the Chiddush of Rav Papa, that the Shoel is not Chayiv in Domin, he doesn't have to pay for the animal, until such time as the animal is destroyed. Not from the time of the Meshicha, but from the time in this particular case of Tvicha. Is therefore, as long as the animal is alive, the Shoel is not Chayiv. The animal is alive, I don't have to pay you money for the animal, here's the animal, it's alive. You own the animal, right? You the Mashal, you own the animal, that's what you own. I don't have to pay you anything for the animal, it's your animal, it's not my animal. Now the Havamina might be that it's actually the animal actually belongs to the Shoel, which is an interesting concept, because bialess ownership really expresses itself in what's called Heter Tashmishim, Schus Tashmishim. The fact that now all the Schus Tashmishim were transferred from the Mashal over to the Shoel, and if the Mashal would try to take the animal and use it, he'd be stealing it from the Shoel. So insofar as the Shoel had full rights to use the animal, in a sense, he's a quasi-bialim, and therefore the Gemara had a Havamina to say that he's already chayv to pay for the animal from the get-go through the Shoel. It was almost like a eschayvus. But the final maskon is that no, that the chiv the chiyuv that's imposed upon the shoal to pay for the animal, whether you call it gneiva according to the ritual, whether you call it according to Rashi, it's just an onus or a mazik, whatever you want to call it, that is incurred at the time of the tvicha, not at the time of the original mashicha. And therefore, if he shechs the animal on Shabbos, then simultaneous with the chiyuv misa, he has the chiyuv mamon, or let's say it the other way around, simultaneous with the chiyuv mamon to pay as a shoel, he incurs the chiyuv misa for violating Shabbos. And the Mela, Rapapa tells me the chiddush that we apply kim levi the rabbi. Now we get to the sugya of Rava. Okay, Rabosai, are we ready for Rava? No, I'm not. I mean, I've been working very hard here. This is a tough sugya. Let me ask you just a question before we start, Rav. I just want to know an intuitive, like knee-jerk response. Just, you know, let's say, you know, you're a man on the street, you know, walking down the street, and I tap you on the shoulder. You don't know Shas. You don't know Bavli. You don't know Yishalva. You know, just your intuitive, natural response to the following question. A shoel took upon himself a tremendous amount of responsibility, to the extent to which if he can't return the animal, even if the animal died from old age or was hit by a truck, he has to pay for that. What would you say about it intuitively, about the children of the shoel? And I'll tell you, the nafkamina is going to be the following. Let's say the shela was a 30-day shela, and never the shoel died 2 weeks into the shela. Now, the children inherit the rights of their father. Do they inherit the responsibility that in event that this para, this cow dies, they have to pay for it? What would be your knee-jerk response?
My intuitive reaction is that the inheritors inherit not only the money, but the debts.
Okay. So that wasn't my intuition. My intuition is the following, that when you accept upon yourself responsibility, you cannot transfer that responsibility over to anyone else unless they agree to accept upon themselves responsibility. In this case of the Yarshim, they don't want the headache of having to return this cow, and if the cow dies and trips and falls and breaks its neck, they have to pay for it. They never accepted that. But Chaim's point is, but wait a minute, you know, it's very, you know, the Yarshim here are really playing a very interesting game over here. You know, they're willing, you know, when it comes to the Skuyo, well, we have, you know, my father had two more weeks of She'ela rights, you know, that will inherit, you know, we'll take over his rights, but we're not going to take over any of the responsibilities. Omar Rav, he niach lahem, the word lahem means Yarshim, avihem, their father, para she'ula. So the paro was, let's say, borrowed for a period of time, and then he dies. Is mishtamshin ba kol yimei she'ela? So until the end, the balance of the she'ela, they are allowed to use it, which means basically they inherit all the rights of their father, including the rights to use the she'ela. Why? Because the yoresh replaces his father, and he picks up all the rights, all the monetary rights of his father. However, mesa, what happens is the paro trips on a banana peel and breaks its neck. Ein chayovim bi'onsa. They never accepted upon themselves that his chayus, that shibu, that chiyu, to pay for onsa. Again, if they did something to damage the cow, you know, if they were negligent with the cow, that's a whole different story. But onsa, that even if the cow was hit by lightning, they have to pay for that? They don't have to pay for that. That's the Reisha of Rava. Now we get to the Seifa. In the Reisha, the lawyers clearly designated this cow in the estate as a borrowed cow. So the Yarshim, you know, when the I don't know how you say it in English, when they divvy up all the property, you know, of the estate, the proprietor, those who are in charge, they said to the in the Reisha. They said to the Yarshim, this is a parsha ula. You can use it, and you'll have to return it at the end of X amount of time. Now we have a new case in the Sefer of Rav. Kasvurim shalavim hi. They inherit the cow, and guess what? No one notified, no one tipped them off that this cow belongs to Yankel. They thought like all the other cows in their father's herd, that this cow belongs to the father. So what did they do? Tvachuha, vachluha. They wanted to have a steak dinner. You know, maybe it was Yom HaTzmut or something, so they wanted to do a naf-naf. So they took the cow, they shechted it, and they had a great meal. Well, maybe they went to the Tzimmerim during Ben HaZman, you know, after Tisha B'Av, and the whole family's together. Hey, let's shech the cow. Why not? So in this case, we cannot hit them with the brunt of the law, because we cannot be too harsh with them, which means make them pay for the cow, because they were of the impression, and no one gave them any other impression, that this cow, Elsie, was like all the other cows in the herd, that it's their cow. They didn't do anything wrong. That's like a mazik who is totally unaware of his obligations for the property of someone else. On the other hand, the Gemara says, we can't let them get away with nothing because they enjoyed a very good steak dinner. Is Mishalim Dmei Basar Bizal. A brand new principle here. They will pay the market price, not for being a mazik or a shoel, but for hanah. Do you remember this concept of hanah? We discussed it about a month ago or 2 months ago, that they benefited from it. Now, when you want to evaluate their benefit, there are two systems of evaluation. One is the mechir hashuk, which means the market price. So if you were selling this, the meat of this cow as steak meat, you would charge 100. That's the full price on the market. But there's something called Dmei Basar Bizol. Dmei Basar Bizol means like a person who's going out of business, so he does a closing sale, and he slashes the price. So a slash price means it's only 2/3 of its value. Meaning, we're going to slash it down by 1/3. That's called Dmei Basar Bizol. Okay. So far, so good. And again, the sugya of Dmei Basar Bizol is a sugya in Bav Metzia, which again, I don't know if we'll have to get into that now. But what we're really interested in is the sefer, the very last line, the closing postscript, so to speak, of Rava. And just from a methodological or a structural point of view, whenever you see a resha and a sefer, and then some line at the end, like a postscript, you're always confused as to whether that postscript goes back to the ratio or goes back to the safe. Just as a methodological, Talmudic methodology. Here's the what I call the postscript, the nun bet, you know, P.S. He niach lem aviyam achrayus nechasim chayovim l'sham. The picture changes entirely, says Rava, if they inherited not just this cow, but they inherited a piece of real estate. That's called shibud nechasim.
Nechasim here is real estate?
Real estate.
Is it because?
Because of the word achrayus. Whenever you see the word achrayus, you remember like yesterday I told you that whenever you see the word gneva, it means keren?
Yeah.
You know, like, so whenever you see the word achrayus, it means karka, it means real estate. And that's a concept which my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik used to always call betichus. I never knew where the Rav got that word from, because grammatically there's no such word as betichus. But anyway, the Rav used to use that term in shiur. Betichus means that I can rely, I'm secure with karka. Karka is always like the most secure thing, because there's nothing you can do with karka. You can't move it from place to place. A diamond ring might be worth, is invaluable compared to a piece of real estate, but the diamond ring is here today and gone tomorrow. But karka is there forever and ever. So that's called achrayus. Says Rav. Oh, wait, let me just read the punchline here. Chayovim l'shalim. Chayovim l'shalim means that in this case, the yorshim, because they inherited a piece of real estate from their father, they have to pay the entire price of the parva. And now the Gemara is going to do some sorts, and they have to try to figure out where to fit this in. Ika demaslia resha, ika demaslia sefer. That's the structure of the sugi.
Wait. I have the cow.
Yeah.
Okay. Something, whatever happens to it, doesn't go back to the original owner. And things change because I happen to have a piece of inherited piece of real estate, maybe right. not even where the cow is.
Because it's Shiva, because right. because the cow is Shiva to the car. In other words, it's Galgal, it's connected, and that, is that why?
Well, I wouldn't say, well, yes and no. I mean, yeah, what you say might be true, but just I think just for clarification, what it means is that the father, in his lifetime, already accepted as a shibud, his nechassim already mishubadim to pay for the cat.
Okay, so that's
why. That's why. So when they inherit, they inherit a lien, L-I-E-N, on the cat.
To clarify, if the father's
the will testament,
he says that there's that achrayus. He wants that price not through karka but through metaltalin. It wouldn't work.
You mean if, let's say, he does an apotiki, what's called a he designates metaltalin as a collateral for payment.
So
then I assume the same halacha would apply in that rare case because they inherited that piece of metaltalin. You know.
Okay. I just.
I would assume, again, we're only at the very beginning of this very complicated
suit. Okay.
So I'm just going to very quickly run through Ikonomasli Areshi, Ikonomasli Asefa, and we'll leave the bulk of the work for tomorrow. I'm just going to push it to read it through. Ikonomasli Areshi. This goes back to the Reisha. In the Reisha, if you recall, they knew, the Yarshim were absolutely appraised of the information that this is a Parasha Ula. But the Reisha says they don't have to pay for the loss of the para. Well, comes along Rav and he says, wait a minute. If the Yarshim inherited a piece of karka from their father, that karka was already at the time of the father's life mishubad to pay for this para. Because the very moment that the father in his lifetime made what's called a meshicha, he took the para into his possession, he already was mishabed his karka that in event that the para is lost, and there's no money, there's no cash, you know, what we call liquid assets to collect and pay up for that part, then it's collectible from the karka. So therefore, the Yarshim inherited a chiyuv that has nothing to do with them. It was already established by their father. And now, the part goes back to the, the part is gone already, but I mean to say, the dmeah para, the value of the part will be collected from the karka. There's another way of understanding it. In the case of the Sefer, where the Yarshim were not aware of the fact that what? That this Elsie, the cow, belonged to Yankala, that they weren't appraised for that fact. They went ahead and shechted it to have a steak dinner. And the Mishnah said, and Rava says in the Sefer, that in such a case, they pay only Tmei Basar Bizol. Oh, no, says Rava, if it was Karka that they inherited, they would pay the full price, market price of the basa. And tomorrow, we're going to analyze these two opinions as to how to interpret Rava's final postscript. Why one opinion rejects the other, vice versa, and that in Yitzchak Shem is going to be tomorrow. If I can just borrow your pencil to make a note where we got up to. Very good. Okay? So it's possible that tomorrow we'll get as far as Lamed Hayim now. Final one.